Office hours are now open. Welcome to the show where we answer everyday questions about life and work in Luxembourg by talking to business owners, employees, entrepreneurs and experts. Send me your feedback to adam.petersen@rtl.lu or on LinkedIn. But for now, on to the show. On Office Hours today, we have a tale from the top. And while my guest today is definitely at the top, I'm not exactly sure what he is at the top of. An ex-professional sportsman, he is now a successful entrepreneur, also a cartoonist, novelist, e-foil enthusiast, and is probably best known for being a social media influencer, or some may say an internet troll. I am talking about Jerome Block. So welcome to the show, Jerome. So my first question, if you were to sum up one job title for you at the moment, what would it be?
Entrepreneur.
Excellent. So I want to take you back to the beginning. My first knowledge of your work is as a golf professional. So how did you go from being a young boy in France to a golf professional?
Well, it asks, of course, the question, are you born an entrepreneur or do you become one? I studied in a classical way until my back in France, heading for being a doctor.
So your parents were into science? They were.
My father was a dentist and he got me quite old. Secret in the family was that the timing was perfect because when I finish my studies, I can take over because it's going to be, 63. There was just one issue. I would really not like to put my fingers in your mouth. So I remember those years when I was 15, 16, 17. Everybody, oh, Jerome's going to be such a great dentist. And I was like, this is the worst job for me. And I was doing good playing golf. My dream job could have been to be some kind of a teacher, maybe English teacher. I like to learn and to share what I've learned. And so when I was really like 3 months before signing up to medical school, I talked to my father. I said, look, I need to talk to you. I don't want to do that. That was the luck of my life. Instead of saying, you know, shut up and just do it. That's what you have to do. He told me this vertiginous sentence. Son, do what you want, but never come back and complain.
Good advice.
It was hard, I can tell you. It's like really straight into the guts. Huh? You spend, 48 hours thinking, is this the right thing, not the right thing? So we found a compromise. At the time, you still had to do the army in France.
Yes.
And because I was playing golf with a general, I knew I could be his personal trainer during my army time. So we found a deal. I said, look, I'm going to just do my army now, so it's done. Yeah. And then I can be a golf pro for 1 year. And then maybe I'll decide. Yeah. And he said, oh, that's a fantastic idea. So I did that. And it was immediately clear this was what I wanted to do. So I became a golf professional after that. I'll cut the long story short. But at the same time, I was still doing business plans. I was doing projects. I remember I did one for when I was 20 years old to open a shop in Metz. I did another one for the football club when people are at the halftime to do some penalty shootout with a radar. So I was an entrepreneur already. I was able as a golf professional to fulfill this aspiration. I was doing a lot of consulting, a lot of corporate events. And then, you know, I became 25, 26. As a golf professional, you've got two seasons. From April to November, extremely busy, making a lot of money, working very, very hard. And then from November to April, not busy at all. And I would buy a lot of books. I would do some lessons at CNED, which is a long distance learning school. And so I had this balance in my life. Work very hard, learn. And I got this chance that I could contemplate every year during 6 months my next step. And it was always about creating a company, possibly a communication agency. And that's how I jumped into creating my company on the 5th of January 2000.
Yeah. So I want to just stick on the golf a little bit because golf it's a brutal game. Other sports like football, you might get relegated if you're not doing very well, but you still have a contract. Where with golf, you play typically, I think, 4 rounds of golf. The first 2 days you play and there'll be a field in the big tours of maybe 140 people. 70 get cut and they go home with nothing. I mean, if you don't make the cut, you don't get paid.
Well, in my case, most of my revenue came from teaching. I made a little bit of money playing, but this would not be... I would never dreamt myself as competing against Tiger Woods. Yeah. I was not good enough for that. I knew it from day one. I still love golf a lot. Tomorrow I'm going to play at the Golf Club Grand Ducal. I look forward to it. It's for me, it's like a martial art. It's a body, mind, constantly changing context. The classical mistake people make is if you made a birdie on hole number 10 at Kikuoka last week with a 7-iron, the classical mistake, next time you're going to play the hole, you say, oh, it's a 7-iron. Well, maybe not, because the wind has changed, because the pin position is different. So the key word about golf for me is culture. Trust me, you cannot cheat. You cannot not be accountable. It's the ball goes in the water. It is your fault. And you need to live with it. And I think this is a huge edge that I had when I started my own company in 2000, that I was not properly trained. If I had to do it again, I would study more, for sure, because I learned the hard way by doing and failing. But I had a big edge, which was I had the proper culture, relentless, extremely accurate, full ownership. And of course, this, as you know, 25 years later became the key elements of my narrative on LinkedIn.
I thought there might be a link between the experience in golf and the push you have on accountability.
Absolutely.
Which we'll probably get a little bit deeper to into the second half. But I want to carry on your journey. 24, 25, you said you stopped playing golf, went into business full time. So tell me about
that. I was in 2000, you mean, when I started doing my company. So I was 27 years old. I was hesitating a lot. There was a decisive moment, which was with Bob Knipp. You can call him my mentor if you want. I was teaching him. And like everybody, you know, I'm sure you have friends who say, oh, soon I'm going to make my company, or I'm going to write a book. Everybody does that, says that, and 99% never do it for a long list of reasons. So I was talking with him at Kikuoka, where I was his pro, and I said, oh, you know what, Bob, I'm going to do my communication agency. And I was not serious about it. It was just blah, blah, blah. And to my amazement, he said, oh, this is very interesting. Why don't you come and see me in my office on Tuesday? And I was like, okay, well, fine, okay, I'll come. So I had to prepare myself, take a jacket, you know, a tie, and visit him in his offices. And I came to see him with a business plan I had done like the 48 hours before. And I know it was really, really bad. I remember what I wrote there. It was just an unprepared PowerPoint. He welcomed me. I had coffee, came in his beautiful office. He had a look at it. Didn't frown, didn't comment much. And then after a minute of that, he just turned to me and said, wow, Jerome, do you believe in it? That's the only question he asked. And I said, yeah, of course. He said, then you have to do it.
So he believed in you.
You have to ask him. He's still around. I still admire him a lot. This was absolutely a game changer. And I believe without this, I would still be a golf professional today. And this is why I spend so much time today talking to young entrepreneurs, because I'm fully aware of the potential impact of a coffee with them. Yeah. Those coffees, when you're an entrepreneur or about to create your company, are life-changing. Yeah. They can stop you from doing it, or motivate you. In my case, certainly, thanks to Bob, it became real. And so I became much more relentless on this business plan. I'm more serious about finances, business plan, risk management, blah, 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 to the point where I made a deal with myself. And a quick advice to aspiring entrepreneurs, I was extremely busy on a diary. Because during these times, you have so much to lose. I had a good job. I was a star of my golf club. I was making easy money. But you also have a lot to win. And it's not financial necessarily. It can be on a personal basis. Is it true to your values, to your long-term goal? So I was very, very busy on my diary saying, okay, shall I do it? Shall I not? I was asking the question, answer, blah, blah, blah. And I made a deal with myself. I say, look, you're 27. Do it now. I give you until your 30th anniversary, which is September 12, 2002. And if you're not profitable by then, go back to golf forever.
Did you make it easily, or was it just in time?
I was profitable after 5 weeks.
Really?
Yeah, I talk a lot about precariousness. Yeah. And, you know, as long as I was a golf professional making money, there was no way anything could be successful in my venture because I was just not precarious enough. Yeah. I woke up when I started the company in 2000. It was a disaster because I had started this company. I only had invoices coming in. I had to buy a computer. I had to give the 12,500 euro of capital. It's only invoices. Yeah. And I had my clients, you can say, calling me for a golf lesson. I say, no, sir, I'm stopping for a while. And why? Well, I'm starting a company. So I was refusing business on one side and paying invoices on the other one. I tell you, this was not fun. I felt miserable, literally sick. If you accept to go that low, you become very creative. But when I talk to entrepreneurs, this is my main advice. Embrace it. Mm. Just get low. Sleep 2 hours for a while. You'll sleep more in the weekend. But I believe this is where the magic happens. You become super creative. You become super relentless. And after 5 weeks or so, I started reaching out to people desperate. Saying, I'm starting a business. I don't know what I've done. That's what I'm selling. Please buy something. And I got lucky that I had a good network thanks to my golf career. Yeah. And I very quickly had a model where I knew it would fly. I would not get rich, but I knew I would sustain the business. Yeah. And then it's been 25 years now. We could talk about the episode. I can tell you it's not a straight line. There was a lot of changes, a lot of adaptation, massive failures, huge successes. But as my father said, you know, don't worry about the destination. It is about the path, and he's 100% right.
I want to race through the business career and then return to the 2023 when you made the decision to start posting on LinkedIn. So tell me about that decision.
Well, I think I'm a good example of these neo-Luxembourgers. I arrived in 96. I'm deeply in love with the country. I love the history, the culture. I'm the biggest tourist in this country. And so this is very much what you see. I think you worked at Amazon. I'm sure you've seen the same thing. The foreigners are the biggest fan for a long list of reasons. I'm very interested in politics. A fun fact is that I met Xavier Bettel back in Nancy in 1995.
Was that when he was doing that...
Yes, he was studying.
He's studying that he had to give back.
Something like this. So I'm not going to comment on that, but it was already, I can tell you, exactly the same Xavier that we know today. You liked him immediately. First time I saw him, hey, Jerome, blah, 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 blah. And the first time I came to Luxembourg, I go to the cinema, and here he is giving some flyers for a political party. That was in 96. I'm like, oh, so you're in politics. So I follow politics very closely, and anybody doing that can see that it's very human, but the distribution of wealth since this investment fund miracle, we went from 50 million assets under management to 6 trillion. Mm. It's legendary. When historian will look back at it, people will say, wow, what have they done here? I don't think people are understanding this just happened. And the way Juncker redistributed money like a maniac was worrying for me because I was like, hey, what if this stagnates? Mm. And Robert Kiefer at the time from Social Security said, this is absolutely nonsense. We should not base the state business model on an eternal 3% growth of GDP. It will not be sustainable. He was 100% right, but he was 100% right early. We could have expected this to be a problem in 2012, especially at the time we were giving back the banking secrecy. But at the time, private equity kicked in, which gave us another big wave of growth. So Kiefer was right, but early. Mm. And when was he right? He was right in 2021. Mm. That's when the growth stalled. Yeah. We went, you can look it up, alfie.lu statistics, industry statistics, and you will see it goes up from 2000 to 2021. And now we're still today at the same levels. Yep. So we no longer have this 20% growth, which is basically feeding the country with more taxes, more jobs and everything. And this is when this 3% eternal growth of GDP becomes an issue because now we had indexation. So we would basically need to sustain our economy 4.5% growth of GDP, which I don't think we will see it before 2035. Yeah. That was my analysis. And the second thing I was analyzing is that there was a very big unbalance because you have one genius in communication, that's Xavier Bettel.
Yeah.
If you look back how he was elected mayor of Luxembourg against Mr. Helminger, it was through Facebook. I think he won by 500 votes, but he already had 50,000 followers on Facebook. He won the title of mayor on Facebook. Then you see how he became prime minister. You look at how he does his campaign. That's my job. I know what his narrative is. I know how he's using it. I know his metrics. They are brutally good.
Yeah.
It's more than 100,000 people follow him on LinkedIn. This is incredible. So I always considered that the politics in Luxembourg, because of social media, are now no longer a level playing field. Heavy communicator like Xavier have a huge advantage, and I don't like it because, of course, it's distorting the political debate, because you might have a better idea, but he's got such a big platform, he might, you know, have an advantage separately from the quality of the debate.
Yeah.
So I'm not at all a pro-CSV or a pro-LSAP or a pro-DP. I'm a pro-Luxembourg.
Yeah.
And I started posting in 2023 on a very simple basis. I looked back at 2017 when CSV did this legendary failure, Mirung en Plan. I think it was 2018. First, you look at your RTL polls in May. It was impossible to lose. CSV had an advance which was so big. You just had to do nothing and you would win. And not only did they do nothing, they refused to do anything. So when Mr. Wiesler was questioned by journalists, he said, "We have a plan, Mirungen plan. Okay, what is your plan?" "Yeah, you know, vote for us and then you'll win."
We'll
see. And I think that's what they decided to do. Let's not say anything so we cannot lose.
Yeah.
Well, the issue is when you do that is that Xavier Bettel saw the opportunity. He was everywhere. That's exactly when he decided, when I'm elected, you will have an additional day off.
Yeah.
And I'll do this, and I'll do that, and I'll do that. He went beast mode, and look at the polls. He managed to reverse it and get this incredible re-election, despite the fact that Gambia, the coalition, CSV, LSAP, Green, had not impressed at all.
Yeah.
I don't think it worked at all. And so my contribution was to say, okay, guys, CSV should now try to communicate just as well as DP, just to make sure that we are reaching a point where we have real debates. I want to know what you guys will do about pensions. What will you do about the attractiveness? What will you do about the public service? Are you planning to make it fatter and fatter until it explodes? Tell me, because right now nobody's saying anything. And I was right, because in 2023, as you saw, what do you remember from this campaign? Nothing.
Mm.
The only thing you know is that Frieden was in a pro-business campaign. What does this mean? Does this mean the others are against business? So I jumped in May saying, oh, come on. I think my first post was, where is Mr. Frieden's book? He had 10 years to write a book about his plan when he's going to be elected, if ever. Where is it? And so immediately I saw there was traction. And then, you know, the culture of the golf professional kicked in. I have not missed one day since May 15th. 2023.
And you post every day or do you schedule them?
I was up this morning at 6 and I was writing about what traditional banks are missing. And, you know, I think this is the thing that people miss. I believe bias is a very strong thing in social media.
Yeah.
People read my post with their own bias.
Yes.
So people who want to be popular on LinkedIn go, oh, he's doing this to be popular. I don't care about being popular. I want to be myself more educated, a bit smarter, and I want to stimulate healthy public debates.
Brilliant. So we've got into a lot there. We've got from your start in France, not making the decision to not become a dentist, which I think was a good decision.
Thank God.
Made a good decision not to continue teaching people how to improve their backswing and not slice it, and into entrepreneurship, and now entering the political arena. So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I've got a few chewy questions for you. LinkedIn is the only platform that does not allow you to monetize your audience. I have a paper where I calculate the revenue I've lost due to clients who are hesitant because of the tone of my posts. I'm at €65,000 in losses, so be it. That quote you've just heard doesn't sound like a good business decision of a successful entrepreneur, but it was in fact from my guest, Jerome Block, in his own website, Luxembourg Official, so I'm trusting the source. It's from an interview published in October 2024, so now I'm predicting the number on the paper has gone way above 65K. In part one, we learnt about Jerome Block's journey to the top, and now we will get into some of the Chewy questions. And that quote brings me to the first of the Chewy questions. Are you more of a politician now than a business person?
I think that's a really good question, and it's something we should all ask ourselves, is what is politics today? And I like to take the Greek meaning of it, which is, you know, the people managing the country, or at least it's how I feel it. So my short answer would be, am I in politics? Yes. Am I in a political party? No.
Now, you've set up a site, stripes.lu, mm-hmm. which has data. You rely on data to inform your decisions, which I really admire as a scientist. Could there ever be a Stripes political party?
The short answer is no. And why? Because there is no need. There's enough political parties in Luxembourg. I just don't believe in this old model. I believe you can really influence positively a whole country outside of any structure. I give you an example. The irony of the real estate market in Luxembourg is that my offices are in the exact same building as CSV. So two floors above, Luc Frieden, for example, this is where they meet.
Were they really happy when they saw you?
I'm sure they were. I'm absolutely. And again, I have a very good relationship with them, as you know. They give me interviews. Do we need one more of these where we need to start finding money and structuring in villages? You know, this is politics in Luxembourg. It doesn't happen here. You need a guy in Remish. You need a guy in Clairvaux. No. We don't need that. Everyone has its own role to play. I fully trust the existing party to do the job. But I also believe citizens like me to express their worries and to influence positively as a politician that are in charge. If you have 100,000 people saying we now really need to reform pensions, trust me, they will do it. Yeah. They are politicians.
Yeah. You're a neo-Luxembourger like myself who's come and naturalized to be a Luxembourger. There are different constituencies and different cultures within the country. So tell me what you feel about that.
I don't know if you know, but I'm passionate about the history of Luxembourg. I'm publishing a cartoon about the history. It's the first time it's been done. Can you believe this? This is, for me, when I discovered that a year ago, it was incredible. We have an amazing history starting in 963. And if you're a child, or if you're a new employee coming from France, you cannot go to Ernster today and buy a cartoon about the history. Yeah. I guess it's the only country in Europe where this is the case.
And this cartoon is coming out in lots of languages.
So three different editions, one in Luxembourgish, one in French, and one in English. We are contemplating to do German, but let's first get those three out on the 28th of September. You can buy it at Ernster. Culture, as you said, is very important. And I say it with a lot of love for the country. We all need to remember where we come from. And where we come from is agriculture. Until 1970, either you were a farmer or you were, for a small part of the population, working for the steel industry. And there's not, we shouldn't be ashamed about that, but we should recognize that this is only 55 years ago. So it's a very, very strong basis for our culture. Then on top of it came, of course, a very public culture. If you were not a farmer, then maybe you were a teacher, you were working in hospitals. And then, of course, with the 30 years of crazy growth, you might have become just a public servant in one of those hundreds of public entities or commune, where you come, you know your money will be there if you work or not. I'm sure there's a lot of talented people, hardworking people. There's also people who don't work so hard. Yeah, it's like this. Nobody's going to be fired. Nobody's going to be promoted. And there's an emerging entrepreneurial culture. And this is my segment. Yeah. I'm posting to share to Luxembourg to take a voice for this minority, which is, of course, the real economy. Yeah. And I think this voice has never been audible. And thanks to LinkedIn, I think I showed to people how relentless we are, how transparent we are, how accountable we are.
later in the series, I'm going to be talking to Daniel Kirikov. I'm really interested in his country, EasyBid.
EasyBiz
that it's just amazing. makes it easier for entrepreneurs to get through the red tape of government forms that you have to fill in on MyGuichet, and makes that simple so people can focus on their actual business.
One word about this, because I know Daniel really well, and this is a very good example that you're giving. You know, the way you talked about it, if I'm just listening to your program, I'm like, oh, that's another startupper. It is not. I don't know if you know what he's doing. Daniel has a venture studio in Luxembourg. He had to explain to me what this means. A venture studio means he's getting ideas. For example, here is completely reinventing fiduciary. €100 million very soon.
So accounting services, payroll services, all that back office for a company.
But you see the scale. So this is a guy that we need to recognize properly. Daniel is a future champion of Luxembourg, if we like it or not. The only risk is, if we don't recognize him enough, maybe he's going to do it from France or Germany or any other country. We need to recognize better the existing champion, like Xavier Buc, like Jenna Elvin, that we have many. And those ones, and I have in mind, of course, Daniel, of course, Dmitry Panenkov from Emma, of course, André Reitenbach, Omar Kwaes, we have them, but they are invisible.
So you described yourself at the top of the show as an entrepreneur, and your passion seems to be about helping other entrepreneurs and create that environment, influence the government to then create an environment that supports them in their passions as well.
I'm biased.
You're biased?
I'll be honest with you. I am biased. You know, you need to remember, I started my business in 2000. You have no idea how Luxembourg was at the time. It was a different country. I think we still had in Kirchberg instead of a clear stream and everything. We had the Ford garage, you know, the cars were outside on a field.
Okay.
So people don't understand what those 25 years did. Starting a business then was insane. It was almost impossible. Some things were easier, like it took me literally 5 minutes to open a bank account. That was much easier than today. But all the rest, to find an office, buying a computer was like €3,500 and it never worked. So the whole thing was a bit heroic.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, I think people feel it through my post. I am biased. I've been hitting my head against this huge administrative monster for a quarter of a century. And yes, I'm having my little fun right now because I have so much experiences I can post from the heart and people feel it.
Do you feel it's working? Do you feel like you're making a difference?
That's a difficult question to say. The trap would be to go buy traffic. You know, I passed on LinkedIn 15 million views this year. So people say, oh, that's a lot. Yeah, I don't care. So I think my success is in terms of impact. If you want to know my goal, there's only one. In 2025, and I'm about to fail. The goal is, I want Luc Frieden to start establishing minimal accountability in public services. Sure. So for a year, I've been saying, and I prepared a website, which is called accountability.lu, that I'm willing to give for free to Mr. Frieden.
So this is the three KPIs per department, is that right?
Per entity, yeah. And he can pick the KPIs that he wants. You know, Loft, for example, we've been talking about this Luxembourg House of FinTech forever. I want to know, how much does it cost? How many have been break-even?
Yeah.
Or how many jobs have been created? I just want this elementary accountability, because we all understand that our public service is spending like crazy and it's not getting better. It just keeps doing what the others did. We hire friends, hire. So by putting friends, it's very Trumpian. You're strengthening your position for the next election. And at the same time, you're making friends happy, so they're going to vote for you. It just does not make sense, because the truth is the economy is already unsustainable. So I just need three KPIs per entity. He can pick which one. I know where the data is, but it would be healthy that Mr. Frieden, every month or every quarter, just shares to the population a little set of data saying, okay, look, guys, good news. We have 10 new entities got a license at CSSF. On the insurance side, that's ACA, we got 3 more players coming in and for a total of 100 jobs. At Loft, we are glad to say that 3 fintechs just reached break-even, or maybe we just passed 200 jobs created. We need to get into this culture. Otherwise, we are still trying to create some kind of, this was Xavier Bettel, some startup nation. It will not work with a rural culture or a public culture. You need somewhere an entrepreneurial culture, and we should get inspired by Singapore, Israel, San Francisco. We know how it's done.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And I know that you have to go very shortly back to Fort Rudolo. And I'm hoping you're going to meet Luke Frieden in the lift on the way up so you can remind him again that he hasn't put his KPIs in place.
I think I will fail. But again, Stripes is now finishing its first season. We launched the start of October last year. I encourage everybody to go on stripes.lu/dataset. I'm very proud that I think this is one of the most reliable source of data about everything in Luxembourg, and we are keeping it very, very busy.
Brilliant. I actually use stripes.lu for a lot of the research for prep for this program, so I can heartily recommend it to our listeners. It has been an absolute honor to have you on the show. If you aren't on LinkedIn and don't follow Jerome, I suggest you create an account and start following him. So thank you very much, Jerome, for coming on the show, and thank you to the listeners.